Joining us today is an outstanding ensemble called Trio 826. Its members are three stellar string players. You've heard all of them before on IPR. Well, now you're going to hear them perform for us. It's part of a residency they're doing this week at the University of Northern Iowa. They've kindly agreed to come in and play for all of Iowa live right now, and they'll be staying afterwards for a reception. So if you're in the area, please feel free to come on in. Well, let me introduce the group now. On violin, Susanna Klein. Hi, Susanna.
Hi.
And viola, Julia Bullard.
Hello.
And cellist, Hannah Holman.
Hi, Barney.
Hi, you guys. Well, it's great to have you here. I wanted to ask you, before we hear some music, about the group. First of all, the name, Trio 826. It's such an intriguing name. What's the story?
This is Hannah speaking, and I'll talk about this a little bit. Julia and Susanna are two of my dearest friends, and we go way, way, way back. So I was on the job market a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, and taking some auditions at the same time as reading about all the problems and woes in orchestra land, just questioning our future and what we're passing along to our students. And I'm talking to Julia on the phone, I'm talking to Susanna on the phone, but Julia and Susanna had never met. And I thought, hey, maybe this would be really cool for us to play together and also kind of do an experiment, actually putting the question to the audiences of what is important in classical music and what we can do to help maybe bridge the gap in between performers and audience. So we put in for a grant to play at the Hawaii International Conference on Arts and Humanities. I guess it was December of 2012. So it was accepted, but then we actually had to come up with a name.
And you should tell him what the name of our session was.
Our session's name was Houston, Do We Have a Problem? So I was on the phone to Susanna that night, and so we were, you know, thinking, okay, name. Susanna quickly got on Google, and we Googled the mileage between Virginia and Iowa. And it was 826 miles. So there you have it. My mom was like, well, is it because they work from 8 to 6? Also, people have lots of theories at how we came up with this name. But that's
I would never have guessed. That is great. That was Hannah Holman. So, Hannah, you were the connecting point for the
I guess
whole.
I was the connective tissue initially, yes.
There you go, yeah. And if you don't recognize Hannah's name, she was a member of the Maya Quartet for many years.
Ten years, you've heard her
on IPR in that capacity. She's also the first cellist for the Quad City Symphony. You'll hear her on IPR in that role. She played the Dvorak Cello Concerto with them a few years ago. And she did actually land in orchestra land in New York City. She's in the New York City Ballet Orchestra. Hannah, you are getting around a lot these days.
I'm wearing several hats, yes, but it's so great. I feel so incredibly fortunate.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to hear music, but I wanted to ask the other two members a little bit about each one of you. Now, Julia Bullard, you are very well known in Iowa as a violist and also as an educator at the University of Northern Iowa's School of Music.
I kind of have two hats at UNI as well. I teach viola, so I'm professor of viola, and I also am associate director in the School of Music, and I run the graduate program.
So quite significant teaching activities, but also quite significant performing activities that I've heard you do through the years, not just mm-hmm. in Iowa, in many other places as well.
Yeah, I've had a lot of opportunities to travel, which is great. And actually, the trio just traveled to France this summer and played a couple of concerts there. And last year, I had a wonderful trip to Brazil to play with a university orchestra there. So I really connect my teaching and my performing. So.
It's an important part, I think, for every string player, I would think.
Absolutely.
To be involved in a chamber ensemble of some sort. Were you thinking of the trio particularly, or did it just sort of come together that way?
It just kind of came together that way. We actually had a very active faculty string quartet here at UNI, and since circumstances have changed a little bit, I was looking for something fulfilling in the chamber music realm, and when Hannah suggested that Susanna and she and myself would get together, I thought, you know, this is kind of the perfect thing. And since we all have background in education, this residency this week is actually something that's really important and special to me, because it's a great chance for us to connect our teaching and our playing.
Where are you taking the residency? Could you tell us a bit about it?
Actually, we just came back from another concert. We just came from playing over at Pete Junior High. We're doing a lot of side-by-side playing with students this week from the University of Northern Iowa String Program. And we had a performance yesterday here in Cedar Falls at the high school. Today we played at Pete Junior High. Tomorrow we are in Waterloo at West High School. And then Friday we go to Des Moines and play at a couple of schools in Des Moines.
So really around the state. Are there concerts for the public as well?
Actually, yes. Our recital at UNI is tomorrow, Thursday, at 6 o'clock in Davis Hall in the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center.
Great location. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And then, Susanna Klein, you're the one who I would assume is putting racking up the most frequent flyer miles in this 826.
Well, sometimes
convention.
They come to see me.
I see. Okay.
And no matter which way it goes, it's always 826 miles, but sometimes they come to Virginia. Yeah, I'm based in Richmond, Virginia. I teach at Virginia Commonwealth University. And Richmond is where I originally met Hannah, because Hannah, a long time ago, was assistant principal cello in the Richmond Symphony. And we lived in the same house, almost roommates. There was a door in between, but we got to know each other very well then. And I did actually meet Julia way back when then at a wedding, but you know, it was later that we really became friends and started playing together.
Well, maybe it's time to hear some music.
Okay.
Sure. What's coming up first?
Great. This is the scherzo of the Beethoven trio that we're doing in the concert tomorrow. It's Opus 9, C minor, one of Beethoven's great minor keys, his foreboding thing. It's Opus 9, so it's relatively early, but I think you can hear some of his later music already being foreshadowed. At this point, he hasn't written any string quartets. He's playing around with trios and duos. There's a septet. There's all sorts of what I call non-quartet experimentation that he does. But this is really a masterpiece, and I think you know, shows off his string writing well for three.
I love what you said yesterday at the high school.
What did I say?
About
Mozart, right, because the story goes that he wouldn't touch the string quartet until Mozart died. So when he wrote this and these other chamber works, piano trios, various string works, Mozart was still alive. And then Mozart dies, and he finally then writes Opus 18,
wow,
his first set of string quartets. And I think he was very well aware of who the master was. Right,
yeah.
That's not an accident, I don't think.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, well, we're all eager to hear this. Music of Beethoven. Here is Trio 826 live at Studio One. Thank you. That was awesome. Let me give a standing ovation here. I'm standing up. As I was listening to you play that, I mean, it's wonderful music for one thing, but another thing that jumped out at me, it's like there are three instruments and you are like your equals. And there was this wonderful, like the middle section where it went from one instrument to the next one to the next one. And you're really in this kind of conversation and you're each getting to shine. It was wonderful to listen
yeah,
to.
And one of the great things about string trio as opposed to string quartet, you know, which gets so much attention because so much great music was written for it, is that really, this sounds bad, but there is no second violinist. There is this equality in the voices and this conversation always happening. And for me especially, I feel like it's really made me grow as a player to be in that environment where you're always you know, you're always important, whether you have the melody or not. There's simply not that many voices. And I think that the viola parts usually are more challenging. Wouldn't you say you have a lot of double stops?
I would definitely say that.
Julia gets paid extra for covering more than one part. But trio is very exposed, actually. It's very, there's a lot of balancing that you have to do in the group, and it can be tricky. But I think for us, you know, because we are now doing it more often, I think we're getting better at that, at playing in the medium, because most of us have played a lot of quartets before.
I'd like to ask both of you about this. Julia, as the one of the things about string quartets is there's sort of three parts that create a chord, and then there's another part that's the melody. So it sounds like the violist has to sort of make up for that a lot in string trios. Is that right?
I would say, yeah, a lot of times. I mean, it's possible to have that three-part harmony even with only two of us, because both Hannah and I and sometimes Susanna end up playing a lot of those inner harmonies. I don't know if it's just that we have so many more double stops or
it's so double stops. I'm sorry, we should say for people
two notes
at one time. We call that double stops.
But I think what happens in a lot of this literature is besides utilizing a lot of that particular technique, I think that the composers are very clever about how they voice those chords and how the melody voice does really travel around a lot more. You know, you can think of so many examples of string quartets where it's a first violin solo.
And, nothing wrong with that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. No, there's not. But I think there's maybe less of that in this
definitely,
literature.
Definitely. I think it's more even.
I know that, like, the first time I heard these Beethoven trios, I don't know, I'm dating myself, but it was probably like 25 years ago. And I was blown away that it was only three voices playing, you know, three, it was only written for three, because the way Beethoven writes, it's so rich that you almost don't know that there's only three people playing. Like, you would swear it's a quartet, except it's not. So it's just, hats off to Beethoven.
Maybe if we could hear one more movement from the Beethoven.
Yeah, let's do the slow movement. It's very beautiful. It's kind of And I think for those of you who are pianists out there, I think you'll hear some something that reminds you of the slow movements of some of his piano sonatas as well.
Thank you.
That was the slow movement from Beethoven's String Trio in C minor, performed live in Studio One in Iowa Public Radio's Cedar Falls Studios. Join us if you're around. Come on in. We're going to have a reception afterwards by Trio 826, violinist Susanna Klein, violist Julia Ballard, and Hannah Holman on the cello. That was beautiful. Thank you so much. And as I listened to it, that sense of three people sort of breathing together, there were these pauses in that music, and it was just like you knew exactly where each other was and how to bring it together.
That's I think, a lot of trust and, you know, friendship. And I mean, we can count these things, but sometimes it goes beyond that.
There's a sense of conversation taking place. Mm-hmm. We have some people joining us here in Studio One.
Hello.
And so it's a conversation taking place here for real. But the other thing is that the next piece that we talked about playing is music that was written for home use by a teenage boy, very talented, for the family to play at home. That's kind of gets to one of the ideals of chamber playing and to the kind of playing you guys do. Over to you. Tell us about it.
Well, this was a piece that I was completely unfamiliar with. I found it totally by accident, doing a search, looking for unusual pieces for a string trio. And it's a very beautiful little gem by Richard Strauss. He's so much known for his orchestral music that it was surprising for me to find a piece of chamber music by Strauss. And it turns out that it's quite a beautiful thing. It's a very simple melody. It's not even a very long melody. It's only basically an 8-bar phrase, and each of the variations is very cleverly changed. There's one kind of crazy variation that's a violin solo kind of cadenza-like moment, mm-hmm. also very unusual in chamber music. But it's beautiful. I don't really know what else to say about it other than it was just such a surprise to find this.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
What else can you think?
Well, I was just thinking because, Barney, you said, you know, music written for the home, and that in my mind I was going over chamber music. I mean, I think that the biggest influence really on kind of the explosion of classical music in the time of Beethoven, actually, are two things. The printing press, which allowed music to be printed easily, and kind of the rise of the middle class, which allowed people to have instruments at home, and specifically pianos. Became very common. And that has a big influence on chamber music, because chamber music then isn't just for the courts and for, you know, the well-to-do, but it's also really something to be enjoyed as a family at home. And it was common during that time. If you ever look on the website IMSLP, imslp.org, it has a lot of common domain music available for free, and you'll find all of the symphonies of Beethoven, of Brahms, of Mozart, arranged for piano four hands. So that kind of chamber music, because this is, of course, before records, but really this is how people were able to relive the experience of having heard a symphony. It was so great. Now I want to own the music and be able to do some of that at home. And so that's one of the great things about chamber music, I think, is the kind of participatory nature. Mm-hmm. Actually, people doing it, not just enjoying others doing it.
Right. Tactile.
Tactile, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really meant to be played in small places and homes and churches. And, you know, I think it's very flexible in terms of venue because it's not big.
Wonderful. Well, I'm eager to hear it now. Music of the 18-year-old Richard Strauss, Variations on a Bavarian Folk Tune, performed here live by Trio 826.
Thank you.
Trio 826, performing music by the 18-year-old Richard Strauss. The Kid's Got Talent. That was variations on a Bavarian folk song, something about a dirndl or something.
Something.
But yeah. Anyway, that
even
was
our native German speaker couldn't
really figure out the title.
Okay. It's written in dialect.
So
I have to do some research, but it's actually written in dialect, and it's far removed from my dialect, so I was a little stumped on that one.
What I noticed as we were playing was duets between two of you, but not always the same two. And really, just the way you guys sing together on your instruments was really beautiful. It's really awesome. So
Thank you.
Music, the next piece, I guess the last piece we were talking about playing is by a British composer, E.J. Moran. Who wants to run with that?
Oh, I guess I will.
Okay.
Yay, Julia.
He was born in England, but spent a lot of his life in Ireland.
Ah.
This is a really beautiful piece. It's not played a lot, and we think that it's because it's actually really hard, among other reasons. The first movement is this beautiful kind of pastoral feeling thing in 7/8, which is a little tricky to put together. It has a very lively scherzo movement. The last movement starts out again with this kind of very English impressionist pastoral feel, and then ends with kind of an Irish reel feeling to it. This movement, though, which we all really just love, is the slow movement, and it's absolutely beautiful. It has some dissonance, but it's really very very tonal and melodic. But it's a unique color and a unique voice, I think, that he has in this. It doesn't. Somebody said, "Well, what does it remind you of? What does it sound like?" And I had a really hard time coming up with something to compare it to because it sounds.
And you know a lot of English music.
And I do. I mean, there's a lot for viola, and there is that kind of fascination in this piece with color and texture that I think is so characteristic of so much of that repertoire from the same time period.
That's funny. You know, some of the slowness of it, the pacing, the patience, I guess, of some of the piece, especially in the beginning, reminds me actually of like a Beethoven Mesto in a string quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And not that the tonality is at all the same. It's not, but that kind of slow unfolding.
Or I was going to say
ideas.
Slow movement of Elgar cello concerto. Of course,
cello-centric, right.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure. Actually, probably even more so. Yeah, the patience and the lushness of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just I'm getting impatient to hear
it. Okay.
So, music of E.J. Moran from his string trio, The Slow Movement.
Thank you.
That was breathtakingly beautiful. Music of E.J. Moran, this slow movement of his string trio, a piece I have never heard before. I'm so grateful to...
Isn't that a sad thing to think about? Like, there are all these gems out there, and there's just so much.
Yeah,
you know, and we hope to at least find some of it during our lifetime, but not just the great classics, but also the lesser-known ones. I mean, there are really some amazing things out there.
So that's one of the rewards for all of you as players to be discovering this new music.
That was just... Anthropologists at the same time.
Yeah, and Hunter, actually, at the Cedar Valley Chamber Music Festival, is the one who requested we do this piece in the summer, and we'd never heard of it. What? Who? How do you say his name? You know, but I think we found something we quite like.
Questions about your future plans. Do you have plans, for example, to make recordings? Do you have concert things in the works? What's happening with 308-26?
Well, let's see what's up for this year. We're coming back to do part two of our residency at University of Northern Iowa in the spring.
Yay!
Audience, thank you.
Yeah, I should add that this residency is made possible by the College of Humanities, Arts, and Sciences. And they've been so supportive of this project, especially the aspects that involve reaching out to students. And our spring project is actually a really interesting one. We are collaborating with the University Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies to do a program on music related to the Holocaust in various different angles that we will explore. And we'll be going out and doing some outreach both on and off campus as part of that project.
Talking to some classes. You know, so what we concentrated on this residency was more the playing aspect. And I know we'll be doing some of that, but I think we're going to get into just some theoretical concepts, too, about how to approach the subject of the Holocaust and using music as an entry point.
That is really exciting, and I hope you'll come back and tell us about it then.
Absolutely.
Sure,
yes.
We'd love to. We're shameless. We do that.
It ties in so well with what we've been doing, actually, this last weekend with the Kristallnacht remembrance that Jason Weinberger at the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony put together, which we did broadcast live here. And then yesterday, the Daedalus Quartet music of composers who were all victims of the Holocaust in various ways. So exciting to hear about that. And then the question about recordings. Anything?
Yeah. Well, so far what we have planned, yes. The short answer is yes, we want to do recordings. You know, the trick with recording is a little bit finding repertoire that isn't recorded too often, because you really don't want to put out, you know, the 10th version of the Beethoven Trio as much as we like to play it. I think it's, you know, already been done. So that's one thing. Is what we're involved in right now is to do a grant project through VCU, which is my home school, to put down at least some recording tracks of it's not really a new piece. It's actually a Debussy piece written for piano that's been sort of redone, turned upside down on its head by a jazz composer in Richmond who's on the faculty there. Doug Richards is his name. And so we're going to have our hand at that, and we're going to collaborate with some other players, clarinet and another violinist as well.
And that will go really nicely with a piece that was actually written for us last year by composer Robert Washut, who's on our faculty at UNI, also a very well-known jazz composer and pianist, fantastic musician, and he wrote us a beautiful trio called Sonando that we've been playing a lot. We played it a lot on our concerts last season.
Yeah,
we really want to record
France.
It. Yes. It was a big
hit in France.
And everybody
asks where our recording is of it.
So, so we're going to, you know, hopefully that. So right now we're kind of in the collecting stage of finding some things, some new works, maybe some works that are not new but that have been ignored. Because I think it's also about, you know, changing the conversation out there a little bit, and just in the classical music world, and forming relationships. And so it's not, I don't know, I don't see us a group as going into the studio and recording some of the great masters, not because we don't love to play it, but because I think a recording project for us is, you know, I think we're more in the business of trying to keep music alive in many different angles.
Well, parenthetically, let me say, I hope you guys collectively and individually record a lot of British composers. But getting back to the something you mentioned, Julia, you're not just playing the repertory as it exists. You, Trio 826, is actively expanding the repertory. Sounds like you have already had music written for you.
Yeah, we have. We've had that wonderful piece by Bob Washut, and we sure hope that there will be many more commissions and collaborative projects with musicians from different kinds of genres.
One of the great things I think about Trio is that a trio easily becomes other things.
You know what I mean? You have the makings of a piano quartet, you have the makings of a string quartet, of a flute quartet, oboe quintet. You know, you have kind of a nucleus and you can go from there. So
one of our members even wanted to be a drummer, so or
singer. And do you know that Julia sings? I'm sure you know. So
that's
my
that
dream.
No.
That's my dream, is to get a piece written that involves the viola player singing as well. So,
that's going to cost a lot extra.
But it's going to happen.
We'll see. Steve?
Well, it's just been a thrill to have you guys on the air playing for all of Iowa, giving us a sample of your music. And as we go out, the website is trio826.com. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, this is,
by the way, this is.
It's been just a great delight to have Trio 826 violinist Susanna Klein, violist Julia Bullard, and cellist Hannah Holman here in IPR Studio One in Cedar Falls. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Barney,
Thank
for having
you.
Us.